Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root, the conservative warrior. My show, War Now, airs every day right here on USA Radio from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm also the star of the Wayne Allyn Root Show on Newsmax TV, reaching over 50 million homes. But my favorite role is speaker extraordinaire. I was opening speaker at many Donald Trump for President events. I speak at Republican, conservative, and college GOP events, and I'm available to be the star at your next event. Contact me to arrange for a Wayne Root keynote speech. Call toll-free 888-444-ROOT. That's 888-444-ROOT. Or email wayneroot@gmail.com.
President Donald Trump took credit for Minnesota's strong economy during a tax day visit to the state on Monday, saying his 2017 tax cuts created jobs and brought unemployment to a record low. His economic advisor, Kevin Hassett, tells Fox News there's no other explanation for the great economy.
If you go back to 2016, the Congressional Budget Office is nonpartisan. It forecasted what 2018, last year, would look like. And they said that the economy that President Trump inherited would create 58,000 jobs a month. If you look at what we did last year, we created about 206,000 jobs a month. And so there's this big, big increase in growth and job creation and wages that must be explained by something. And so the question I would ask a critic of the tax cuts is, well, if it wasn't the tax cuts and it wasn't our deregulation, then what was it? Was it like the Martians? Was it, you know, magic sauce?
The president repeatedly touted the 10-year, $1.5 trillion package of tax cuts as the biggest tax cut in history. A county in New York is dealing with 186 confirmed cases of measles. Rockland County Executive Ed Day says he's continuing an emergency declaration to prevent unvaccinated children from going out in public.
Even the governor has utilized this emergency declaration under New York State executive law option for situations far less critical than a public health emergency. I would submit to the people of Rockland that what we are going through now is much, much worse. To say we are overreaching flies in the face of fact, history, and the most important, common sense.
For USA Radio News, I'm Rick Vincent.
USA Radio News with Rick Vincent.
With Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report set to be released on Thursday, the White House is coming up with a counter report to be released shortly after the redacted Mueller material is released. Anthony Scaramucci, former Trump White House Director of Communications, tells CNN.
He's expecting that all the good news is out there now, and there's 400 pages of information. Somebody like the president would have the sense to know that in 400 pages, there's more than syllables. There's likely paragraphs that probably are going to look not great for him or people in the administration or people in the transition.
The president's attorneys have promised such a rebuttal to Mueller's nearly 400-page report for months. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is traveling in Europe with a congressional delegation of both Democrats and Republicans. They're now in Ireland, where Brexit is to be one of the main topics of discussion. You're listening to USA Radio News.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities, or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Available on Amazon.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need.
Won't you stop your crying? I know that you're trying. Everything's gonna be okay.
Alexa, play Maren Morris.
Okay.
Get unlimited access to over 50 million songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Hey, this is Joe Peters, and it is the 16th. We paid our taxes yesterday, so it's April 16th. It's 4:08. I'm in scenic downtown Flemington, and we're going to go through some miscellaneous real estate subjects that I thought would be really interesting for today's show, and I'll be back in just a few. First things first, they're asking me to pay an intro to the weather, and then a few of our paid commercials, and I'll be right back.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunterd In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterd In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So the weather forecast from Android Central is it is 64 degrees right now, 4 p.m., and it looks like we're going to get down to 45 overnight and have a bit of rain. Tomorrow's going to be sunny again with little clouds in the afternoon, 63, low of 46. Thursday, 70 degrees. Friday, it's going to start raining, but we're going to get up to 73 degrees and then back to 66 on Sunday. The lowest temperature overnight is going to be in the high 40s. So sounds like spring may be here. So good news, good news. Let's go to a few more, and I'll be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Once again, this is Joe Peters. Here's a little bit of my background.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So you know who I am. I'm Joe Peters. I do real estate residentially across both Hunterdon and Somerset County, and I can be reached at 908-238-0118 if you'd like to chat with me after the show. I heard a speaker last week at my local Rotary, and he talked about there being now, for the first time ever, five generations in the workplace. And it caught my imagination because I'm not a youngster, and in effect, I said, five generations? And I started going using 20 years as a generation back, and I'm saying we can't have people 100 years old in a workplace. And even if we had the very early – anyway, they really go in 15-year increments, and that's how they got to those numbers to the most extent. So let me go through what those five generations are, what the differences are between them, and then how this relates to real estate if you're looking to sell a house or buy a house. First of all, you got the traditionalists. These were born before 1945, and I fit in that category. I resemble that remark, as they said. These are the guys that went to war, came back, never talked about it, went back to work, and they're probably your parents or your grandparents at this point in time. Then there were the baby boomers, born between 46 and 64. They, in effect, if you were born in 64, 74, 84, 94, 04, 14, you would be 55 years old, and you're probably, and that was the end of it. So the beginning of it, you'd have to end up for 20 years, you'd be 74 years old. These people have not either started to retire or should have started to retire already. People like myself never did, and I'm once again in the traditionalist. Gen X, 65 to 80, then you've got Gen Y. These are our millennials. They were born in 81 to 95. And then Gen Z, the very first Gen Z. These are sub-millennials. We haven't really got a great name for them yet. The first 18-year-old hit the market last year. So we truly have, if I haven't retired and the first Gen Z has hit the market 12 months ago already, five generations in the marketplace. I heard an interesting analysis of it, and it was just somebody that I'm not sure is on top of it, but he had an interesting analysis. He said, if you thought about it, the traditionalists went to war, came back and never talked about it. And then you've got the millennials who didn't go to war and claim they did. I'm saying that's sort of a little on the extreme on both ends, but there's a little bit of truth to everything. And quite honestly, I think the millennials are our future. 50% of our workforce will be millennials in the next 24 months. 50% of our market, real estate-wise, will be millennials as they're in their 25 to 35-year-old bracket. People are typically starting to buy houses in their late 20s, early 30s. The Gen Zs just coming into the workplace. So what does this mean to general business? Each generation came to maturity at a very specific time in history. And what happened during the time where they matured, and they're saying that's from your 14th to the 24th year, sort of dictates your values. And the speaker I heard last week said it's like the music you heard between your 14th and 24th birthday. That's the music you relate to for the rest of your life. And it was a euphemism. He not only meant music, but he meant history. He meant what happened in the world. He meant what happened economy-wise. Can you imagine coming to a peak, coming out of college in 2005 when we went into the economic recession that we hit? They affect you, and they affect your thinking. They affect your values. But what can we do to integrate these generations? Quite honestly, I think the biggest thing we can do to integrate them is to have everybody open their minds. And I think it's a little easier, and I'm one of them, for a traditionalist to open their mind than for a millennial to open their mind. Because I have worked with young people all my life. I've traveled with them. And in sales, you need one gray-haired guy to sort of head the brigade, and a bunch of people can make the wheels spin and the computer screens flash. And we had a lot of fun together. But I don't really believe they ever related to me the way I related to them. I felt that they were our future, and they felt I was, just about at the end of my usefulness. And I think that's typical of where we are today. I mean, I heard, I won't mention names, you could put a face with the comment that somebody said just this week about if Joe Biden was to run for office, we'd be going backwards instead of going forward. Whether or not you like Joe Biden or not like Joe Biden, he's done a lot for the country. He has done what he thought was correct. And just to say that because he's so much older than I am, that would be going backwards, I think is a mistake. I think both generations, both ends of the spectrum, the millennials at one end because the sub-Zs are just turning 18, and then the traditionalists at the other end, some of who are still working like myself, but definitely the baby boomers are still working, heard another interesting comment, and that was people are lasting longer. And it was an insurance agent at one of my leads group talking about it, and she was talking about the quality and the requirements for insurance, that we need different insurance than we needed just a generation ago because people are living longer. She said they were lasting longer. I thought it was pretty funny, but I haven't forgotten it, obviously. So what we now have are different generations in the same workforce, different generations in the same real estate market, different generations shopping that think differently. Now, I think we've all progressed shopping-wise from running to the mall and buying things to buying your staple goods online. And I don't mean staples like the store. I just mean things that are pretty much a commodity you don't go to the store for anymore. And I'll give you a great example. I work out of my house. I go through about 1,000 number 9, number 10 envelopes a year. I used to go down to Staples, get a box, come back. And then Staples started delivering for free. So I used to go to Staples and have it delivered for free. Now, I go online and see who's got it cheapest. And if you're an Amazon Prime, I'm not saying they're the best solution out there, but I use it. Everything you buy through Amazon Prime will be delivered to your house for free. Sometimes it's a $25 minimum, but in most cases, you can buy a box or two of envelopes and have it delivered free. So I've gone from going down to Staples delivering it, to seeing if it's cheaper elsewhere. And sometimes Staples is cheaper, sometimes it isn't. Whoever's got the best price for the same envelope gets my business. Well, the next generation down is getting some of their groceries that way. We haven't started doing that yet. So they're thinking a little deeper into it. I don't think you're ever going to see shopping go away when it comes to, I need to try it on, I need to see how it looks on me. I think that part of shopping will always be around. I know when I need a new suit, I'm not going to buy it online. I go to Brooks Brothers or Brooks Brothers outlet stores and make sure it fits and make sure I like the color. But when I need socks or T-shirts or shorts, pretty much going to buy it online. Why do I need to go to the store and buy something that, in effect, I can have delivered? And I'll tell you what really rings a bell with me is if I start thinking, for instance, last week I needed a couple of bottles of shampoo that I use. It's another item I don't go to the store for anymore. And I said, okay, if I wait till I have a chance to go to my local store and look for it, I'll forget it probably because I'm getting to the forgetful age. And we'll probably come home without it. Why not just go online and buy it? It'll be here in 2 days. I put it on the shelf when I need it. It's there. People are thinking this way. People are doing more and more shopping online. And as a result, we're seeing malls getting downsized. I heard that, in effect, there's a mall down in Ocean County near Monmouth that has been shuttered. The Phillipsburg Mall, I heard just last week, is going to be demalled. It's going to be made into a strip mall, and they're going to put some housing into it. Other malls are just having a tough time. You walk through a mall, and you see a sign that says, coming soon. It's like a murder mystery lie. There's no store coming soon, or at least for most part, there's no store coming soon. It just means that storefront is now vacant. And I think the malls are going to suffer, and I think they have to reinvent themselves as they have. A good example would be our local Bridgewater Mall. You've got restaurants, You've got movie theaters, and you've made it an experience more than a shopping experience. And while you're there, you may do a little shopping. So having the multi-generations look at things different, I think, is good because we learn from each other. But I think you need to assume nothing because it is constantly changing. And I think I'm actually seeing ads on TV now where you can buy your car online. Now, I, for one, I love my cars. I'm a real stickler when I go to buy a car. And I would never buy a car online, but I would probably sell my old one online. But if you go to a car dealership and you feel, in effect, set upon, which some people walk away with that feeling, you may not go back. You may buy the next one online. Let's say the car you're going to buy is a generic car. My better half drives a $19,000, $20,000 car. We lease one every 3 years. Quite honestly, we probably want to go down and see the colors and the models, but I don't need to buy it in person anymore. I could probably buy that online if I could get some benefit out of it. I think the experience there is important as well. If you don't feel you had a good experience, you may try something different next time. If you go and you buy something, I remember the first time we went to Paris, first night in Paris, I said to the maitre d' or the concierge at the hotel I was staying at, where would I go for my first night in Paris? I want to sit outside at a restaurant. He recommended a place, and it was perfect. We were sitting outside under a little overhang because it did start to rain, and we didn't feel uncomfortable. And the couple we were sitting next to were probably 30, 35-ish, probably 30 years younger than we were at the time. And we got to talking because we were staying in a hotel. They were staying in an Airbnb. I said, I've heard of an Airbnb. I don't know what it is. I was paying $404 a night for a room before taxes, and they were paying $159 for a suite, taxes included. The next time I went to Paris, I stayed in an Airbnb. So if you open your mind and you think about what's going on and you think about this intergenerational thing that you can learn from each other, there is plenty there that you can learn. And it goes both ways. I always said, I don't know where it came from, but it's been in my vocabulary forever. Learn from the mistakes of others because you're never going to live long enough to make them all yourself. There's a lot to that, and it's learned through the experience of others. I've learned over the years through other people's experience that there are better ways to do things. And I've always had a mentor or sought out a mentor who could help me figure things out when it became too overwhelming or too complex. I think that open-mindedness has gotten lost a little over the next couple of generations because the one thing I witness, and it may be just my opinion, but tell me if you agree, is that the millennial generation think they're right, and it's pretty hard to convince them that they're not. And I'm not saying there aren't people in the baby boomers and other generations that aren't the same way, but I think you need to be open-minded. And I think when you stop being open-minded and you think you're right, even though you have no substantiation of it, then somewhere along the line you were taught to always think you were right, I think you have to question everything. And when you stop questioning everything, you then are going to miss out on a lot of opportunity. And I think that's one of the misgivings between the generations. And I'm not saying that the millennials aren't right. All I'm saying is there's experience that you can learn from. And I can remember old-time family gatherings when people would say to the kids, just sit and listen. You'll learn from your elders. And the kids, they're bored to death. And whether it was now or a generation ago or two generations ago, the kids didn't want to sit and learn. But if they did, they did. There was a lot to be learned because the older generations have gone through and learned a lot of things that they're perfectly willing to pass down to the younger generations. But if the younger generations aren't going to want to learn it, they've got better things to do as the older generation, and they'll just move on. So, what does this all have to do with real estate? I think what you need to do as I'm looking for the best place to start here. Take a look about the myths about buying a home and then some of the steps. And where do people first make enough and accumulate enough to buy a home? And I would tell you it's probably somewhere past their 28th birthday, maybe even past their 30th or 32nd birthday. We went through 10 years of tough economic times. A lot of debt was run up. A lot of credit was ruined. And in effect, my average buyer looking for a first-time house is usually 30-plus, although I see one every once in a while that's 5 years younger than that. And there's a lot of myths that are in their heads about buying a house. And this is where just talking to a professional, be it your real estate agent or your attorney or your financial advisor, you can learn a lot. And here's some of the myths that I'm seeing the younger generation come into the market with. One is they think their FICO score has to be in the 700s. And while if it's in the 700s, you're going to be much better off and get a better rate, there's no way it has to be there. We're writing loans for FHAs at the 675 level. We're writing loans at conventional at the 750 level. And depending how much money you have down and how good your credit is, you, in effect, can even get a lower entry point than that. Down payments. Most people think you need 20% down. That's not the case. As a matter of fact, the thinking has changed to put down as little as possible. And the thought process behind that, the reason you'd want to put 20% down was the private mortgage insurance disappears. But if you have good credit and only put 10% down, you probably could beat that horse to death. But the thinking has changed in that, okay, so you're going to pay private mortgage insurance about 0.75%. 0.75 times 12 is 9. So you're going to lose about 9% a year by paying private mortgage insurance. Now, did I say that right? 0.75% per month in PMI. So if you had a $100,000 loan, 1% would be $1,000. You'd pay $750 a year divided by 12. If you put your money in an investment, just a conservative investment, you should be able to get 8 or 9% out of that investment. You may pay your investment advisor a little. You may have a little accounting numbers there. So say you net 7 after you did all of that, versus putting all of your money to bring your mortgage PMI down. I argue that, and it's being argued by people who really know what they're doing in this business, you may be better off not putting 20% down and only putting 4 or 5% down and putting the rest of the deposit into a financial investment that's going to give you more than, or if not about the same amount of money that you're going to pay off. You may lose some tax deduction. You may have some interest to pay back on it. But that's the conservative thinking today, is that perhaps you don't need to put as much money down. And then look at the interest rates. Interest rates are really interesting. We were back at the election at about 3 3/8. And interest rates went all the way up to just touching 5% the end of last year. So we went up about 1.5%, roughly. 1% from 3 to 4 or from 4 to 5% would cost you 9% in your buying power. So when you went up 1.5%, you lost about 13% of your buying power. Even at the 9% level, if you could afford a $500,000 house, and now it went up a full percentage interest rate-wise, you can only afford a $455,000 house. And at the same time, that house's value probably rose because prices are going up, especially in our popular price points. And what you're witnessing is that you may now only afford a 4.25 house. So that's what sort of got the stampede going late last year. The interest rates are going up. We got to get out and buy. Well, interest rates have come back down. Interest rates are just over 4% as we speak, and today is the 8th of April, 2019. if you've got excellent credit, and if you have got money to put down, and if you have got a decent job that you've been in for a decent amount of time, you probably can beat that. I'm seeing under 4% at times. So there's really three factors when you go to buy a house. You got to have some credit, you got to have a job, and you got to have some money. The credit probably needs to be 675 or higher. Under 700, you're probably going to go with an FHA product. Over 725, you're probably going to get into a conventional. You might even get that over 7. You need some money down. A conventional product will allow you to buy a mortgage with 3% down. An FHA, 3.5. A conventional FHA, there's some other products out there. But most people are thinking, I need 5, 10, 20%. You don't. The time to start is now. So then you need your amount of money put away, because you do need some closing cost money. And that amount of money is probably 6% up front. 3% down, 3% to close. So if you're going to buy a $200,000 house, you need $12,000. 3%, $6,000 goes down. Another $6,000 goes to close, and you're in a house. You can refinance that house 2 days after you buy it, but in effect, most people refinance a house every 5, 6, 7 years. And the reason for that is better products come out, situations change, they pay off the house, they've got a lot of equity, they want to get rid of the PMI if they've encouraged it. So what are the 10 steps to buying a home? The first one is save for your down payment. You do need some money. And there's a big argument that the people in higher rent areas closer to New York City are not saving what they need in order to do this, and they probably will have a very difficult time moving into home ownership because of that. But, A, you need to save some money. You need to know your credit score. You should pull that at least once a year. You can do it for free, but there's different kinds of credit scores. If you go to one of the, there's TransUnion, there's Equifax, and there's a third one. All three of those are going to give you roughly, if in a point or two, the same credit score back. And for $10 or $15, you can get your credit score. As a matter of fact, you probably should be paying $10 a month or $12 or whatever they charge and just monitoring your credit to make sure no payments have been missed that you somehow inadvertently missed, and to make sure that no accounts have been opened that you don't know about. I know I use an Equifax product, and I've had it for years, so it's probably more expensive, but it's $9.95 a month. And if I've got a parameter set up to say if an account goes up by more than a percentage, let me know. If account's been opened, let me know. And it's a pretty good first alert if something is happening. So you need to know your credit score, and you need to monitor it. Now, how does a credit score get accomplished? They watch your percentage of open to buy. So let's say you have $50,000 worth of open to buy on all your credit cards. You probably shouldn't be using up at any one point in time other than a small percentage of it. Believe it or not, and most people don't, that credit cards aren't meant to carry a balance. They're meant to, you pay it off every month like you would your American Express card. A traditional American Express card has to be paid off every month. They don't want interest for your money. You don't pay it on time, you will get charged interest, but that's not what they're there for. You go get a Visa card, and they would like you not to pay it off, but the best policy would be to pay it off, because if you don't pay it off, you're probably going to pay in excess of 12% interest. And depending on your credit score, it could be much higher than that. So you got to know your credit score. The next thing, step in buying a home, is finding a real estate agent. I'm a good example. Joe Peters, 908-238-0118, or go to my site, jpeters.com. You'll find a lot of information. You decide if I'm the person you want to work with, but I'm the kind of a person you probably want to find. You need to also, before you buy a house, go and get pre-approved. So what I typically do with a customer is get them out, show them a few houses, and say, so where are you thinking price point? We do a pre-showing consultation. And then before I take them out a second time, I introduce them to a credit specialist. I suggest they spend 45 minutes with that person and understand what they can afford. Then that person tells me one thing. Here's your shopping list. price-wise. You're between $250 and $300. That's where they're comfortable at. That's where I have no problem getting qualified. And then you need, with that information under your arm, to go shopping. You're probably going to look at 24 to 36 houses. This is a Joe Peters statistic. I just think of all the buyers I've dealt with, we've shown an average of 24 houses before they made a decision. It probably takes half of that number before you've zeroed in so you're both thinking the same. I'm working with a couple right now. We're just at that point. And now, after three trips out, I think I can probably just about pick a house out for them. And I can't tell you how many people have told me when we got up to 24, 36 houses that we both knew when we walked in the house that this was the one. You get to think the same way. When you find a house, you need to make an offer. And now you need a real estate agent to look at comps to see what other houses similar in price, similar in size, similar in features have sold for and in location. And you need to then get that offer accepted. You go through attorney review. You do an inspection. And that whole process takes about 2 months. The inspection process will give you a laundry list of things to either be concerned about or ask to be repaired. There are seven things that come from an inspection that a seller either has to repair or they have to let you out of the contract. And they're pretty understandable. They are structure, termite, anything that has to do with a contaminant, septic system, water system, electrical system, radon. Those major items have to be repaired. And it's not a negotiable thing. It's something that you're buying a house based on these being functional and passing inspection. If they don't pass an inspection, the seller either has to repair them or let you out of the contract. Then you get down to close and move in. That's the fun part. But the first eight are kind of hectic, and you really need somebody who's done it a couple of hundred times to walk you through. And that person becomes your navigator. In other words, you've never been through this process before. I don't care if it's a vacation trip or it's a hike in the woods, or it's a home buying decision. You need somebody that's done it 100 times or more to navigate you through the system. And how do you make your dream of buying a home come true? First of all, they're saying that you need to automate your down payment savings. So these savings should be coming out, so they're getting put away religiously, either into a 401k, a forced savings plan, a stock plan. Survey after survey, so saving for a down payment is cited as one of the biggest barriers. And it's pretty hard because, oh, I want the new TV. Oh, we should go on vacation because the Joneses went. If you have your goal set and you do a forced saving for payment, it's amazing how quick the money adds up. Building your credit history. First of all, you got to assess it. Then you've got to correct whatever is deficient, because just a couple of points on your credit score will make the interest payment that you're going to pay, instead of being 4%, maybe be 4.5%. And then you got to keep it clean. You got to monitor it, like I'm saying. Understand the things that people will give you a problem with if you don't have it in check. And then you got to practice living on a budget. Even through the period of buying a house, I have to tell people this. We tell them that, you know, you've just made and gotten approved a pre-approval on your mortgage, and you made an offer and you've used it, and it's now going to take us 8 to 10 weeks to get this closed. Do not buy anything of any consequence on any credit card in any way, shape, or form until you're closed. I can't tell you how many times we've gotten to a week before a closing and your credit lender will do a reinvestigation of your credit and find out you bought a new car, or you bought a boat, or you ran up a credit card for some reason. And now your credit score isn't the same. So either you're not going to qualify for the loan that they pre-approved you for, or you're going to pay more interest. Those are all things on the buyer side. Let's look at the seller side. tips for preparing your house for sale. There's 10 tips to give it curb appeal. And I'm going to tell you the three things. If I just shut my eyes and say, what are the three things that make my house more appealing? One is curb appeal. Two is kitchens. And three is bathrooms. And let's see what it says. It says, to improve your curb appeal, give it a facelift, either with a new coat of paint or a new front door. Don't forget to landscape your yard. A well-groomed lawn shows buyers that your home was well taken care of. They've probably made a decision on your house before they open the front door. Make sure all exterior lights are in working order. I can't tell you how many times I see a house with a shingle missing or a light dangling. You really need to look at it the way a customer would be looking at it, and your agent should be helping with that. Wash all the windows inside and out. That is key. People looking out a dirty window are going to make a different decision than people looking out a clean window. Clean out your garage and your basement. Go get a storage unit for $99 a month and start moving now and get all the junk out of your house so that your garage looks bigger, your basement looks bigger. People don't want to see your junk. Remove any lawn ornaments. They may be cute to you, but those flamingos turn people off. Replace worn-out welcome mat. Simple as that, a $20 item. Paint or replace the street number on the house, making it more visible. It's just common sense. You've got to do this when you sell a house anyway. They have to be 4 inches high so that they can see it from street level. It's called the 9/11 rule. You might as well do it up front, and it'll help people find your house. And then power wash any exterior surface to give it a like-new feel. Now, you probably don't want to power wash it yourself. All of these things can be done by yourself. Some of them can definitely be done, but power washing, unless you really know what you're doing, you could do more damage than good. You probably want to get a professional. Now, how do you make your home feel like home? Clean everything. One of the things I do when I list a house is I do a cleaning for the customer. I say it's totally up to you, but if you'd like, I will have your house cleaned from top to bottom. So when people walk in it for the first time, they're going to feel like, wow, this is a nice clean house. You need to give every room a purpose. I've just had a house where the guy was using the living room as his office. I'm saying that's the formal living room. Although formal living rooms don't get used very much anymore, people want to know that that's intended to be the living room, not an office. Let the light in. When I do an open house, turn every light in the house on and open every shade up. It needs to be as bright as possible. Pure logic. Fix anything that's broken. I was in a house that was $900,000 2 weeks ago, and the light switch, not one, but several were broken. I mean, it's just ridiculous to try and get that kind of money because people are going to see the light switch is broken and say, what else is broken that I'm not noticing on the first thing? Unclutter it. You want to get all of that stuff, as George Carlin used to say, out of your house. Put it in that $99 storage shed. Fresh paint and a new carpet. It depends. Your agent will tell you if this is needed. Definitely want to get your carpet cleaned. Organize the kitchen. There should be nothing on the kitchen counter other than perhaps a roll of paper toweling and an ornamental holder and maybe a knife holder. Take all the other stuff. Get a couple of laundry baskets and put it in the garage when you go to show your house. Empty all the trash and get rid of all the laundry. You don't want people to walk in and see what you see on a daily, day-to-day basis. Make sure all doors open and close smoothly. And then replace any light bulbs. Make sure that all the switches work. People do turn the switches on and off. It's interesting. We're getting to a world of automation, and more houses have either security cameras or listening devices in them. And I tell my buyers up front, if in effect there's something we want to talk about strategically about a house, we're not going to talk about it within the house because you never know when somebody's going to be listening to you. It is illegal to do that, but it still happens. They have the right to, in effect, tape or monitor, but they do not have the right to use it in any way, shape, or fashion other than to monitor. Now, here comes one that I bump into all year long. Nobody knows my house better than me. Why don't I just save the money and sell it myself? Well, the answer is, bottom line, I can get you more for your house than you can get for yourself. So it makes no sense on the bottom line. Agents who sold houses sell those houses, proven statistic, for 6% more minimum than those sold as a for sale by owner. And there are two things that will get in your way, and they're both emotional. One's a little logical and one's a lot emotional. The little logical is you need exposure. Everybody in the world needs to know your house is for sale. And if you think putting a sign up in front of it and putting it in a newspaper is going to do the trick, you've missed 98% of your potential buyers. Your real estate agency should be able to get your house listed everywhere so that it's in the Times, it's in the New Jersey papers, it's in Zillow, it's in Realtor.com, it's on Garden State MLS. They know how to do this. This is one of their selling points when they come in. And if you think you can replicate that to get exposure, you're sadly mistaken. You may be able to find a site that will let you put up some four pictures, and from that, some people will be able to get to see your house, but you're still missing a lot. When I list a house, one of the things I do is a professional photo shoot. Runs me a couple hundred bucks. Comes right out of the money I make. But professional photos will bring additional people in. Professional photos will help me make professional handouts, which will bring people back. So I clean the house, I do a professional photo shoot, and I do professional brochures. On top of that, I can zero in on your house and say, based on the neighborhood you're in, the average person living in this neighborhood is in this age bracket, in this education bracket, and in this financial earnings bracket. It's statistics. They're available. On top of that, I can say, and this makes me unique, I can say I have the capability of telling you where people are moving to your zip code from. What zip code are they in today? For instance, in Raritan Township, people come from parts of Somerset County. And I can take those parts of Somerset County and take the profile that I developed for your individual location and advertise directly to that profile in those counties and speed up the amount of people that are going to look at your house and reduce the time it's going to take to sell. And as a result of that, increase the amount of money you're going to get for the house. The quicker it sells, the more people will look at it, the better off you're going to be. This all results in me getting you 6% more for your house than you can. And if you're going to sell it yourself, you're not going to save, let's just use the 6% as an argument point. You're not going to save the 6%. You're probably going to pay at least 2.5%, 3% to an agent that brings you a customer. So you're only going to save half. And for that half, you have to take on a whole bunch of liabilities. And I told you there was a couple of things that happen. One is you don't get the exposure. Well, the second is false pride gets in the way, both on the buyer side and on the seller side. The conversation in the car is, Ethel, that pompous idiot thinks that kitchen is modern. It's not. George, did you hear what he said about the basement being state-of-the-art? It's nothing more than paint on a wall. You can discuss what you want in private, but when you get in front of people and you start to say stuff like that, and it happens, you never know what it is you're going to say that's going to sort of tick the other person off and kill the deal as a result of it. And I'll give you a great example. People said, do you mind if we stay home? We'll sit out the table at the pool. All right, if that's the best you can do, sit out at the table at the pool. We'll try to not get in the way. Well, the people go through the house. They sort of like it. They go outside. They like the pool. They can see themselves being there. And they ask a simple question to the people sitting by the pool. Where are you going? And the answer comes back, well, we're not sure, we haven't started looking yet. Well, to the people buying the house who need to be in 8 weeks, that tells them there's no way in hell they're going to be able to get these people out in 8 weeks. Just something as simple as that. You never want the buyer to meet the seller because you get this false pride, you get the wrong answer to an innocent question, you get people not understanding other people and how to deal with other people. How many times have you walked through a grocery store and a person at the counter was absolutely personalityless? Well, people still in their house are like that as well. And then you can come from the grocery store another time and there's wonderful persons on the counter. I'll give you an example of how to think about this a little bit. How many times have you walked through and just pick a brand store, and you'd go into one brand store, and everybody, when you go to talk to them, they won't make eye contact with you. And you go to the same brand store 10 miles away, and you walk through it, and everybody looks you in the eye and says, can I help you? Do you think that's an accident? It isn't. They're trained to do that. And the first store lacks the training, and that store manager probably won't be there for long because people don't like to be treated that way. Well, real estate agents are trained both by their agencies and their mentors on how to work with customers. And there's got to be 8 different sets of people, you as a home seller, if you're thinking about for selling by owner or FSBO, you got to deal with the buyer, you got to deal with the buyer's agent, you got to deal with the buyer's bank, you got to deal with the appraiser, you got to deal with the inspection company, you got to deal with the title company. We haven't even mentioned the lawyers yet. All of these people need to be negotiated with by somebody who's done this hundreds of times and had hundreds of successful sets of negotiations. Because I can't say an agent's seen it all, because every once in a while something new crops up, but in most cases they've seen what's going to happen and they know how to handle it. So where do buyers find their house today? 50% start on the internet. 28% deal with a real estate agent. 7% find it off a yard sign, and only 1% out of a newspaper. The bottom line is, before you decide to take on the challenges of selling your house on your own, and you're only going to save half the commission because you're going to have to pay a person with a ready and willing to buy buyer, and I won't take 3% if I'm in that situation. So the best you're going to do is save 3%. Let's get together and discuss it. I think you're going to find, both from talking to me and understanding my process and understanding by looking at my references and understanding by some of the things that I do differently, that it truly takes a person that you're going to feel comfortable with in order to handle this transaction for you. It's quite honestly the biggest financial transaction, whether you're buying or selling, but we're talking about FSBO, so this is selling. It's probably the biggest financial transaction that you're going to do in your life. And you're going to do it yourself? I don't think so. I think you're headed for a lot of disappointment if you make that decision. And I think you should at least, before you make that decision, go talk to a couple of agents and hear them out. And I'd like to be one of them. And quite honestly, it's busy out there. It's not like people are sitting around, good agents at least, waiting for the phone to ring. Good agents are probably overcommitted or pretty much committed to the point where they're comfortable. If you get somebody that answers the phone, it'd be like calling your plumber and have him answer the phone and say, yeah, I could be there in 10 minutes. How good of a plumber do you think he is? If he's a good plumber, he's probably booked weeks, if not months in advance, and maybe be able to squeeze you in a day or so if you have a true emergency. But real estate agents are the same way. The good agents are probably pretty well occupied already and be willing to work with you as long as you were willing to work with them. But I can't tell you how many times, I'm a fisherman, so I equate this, and I don't care if it's a buyer or a seller. There's 3 phases of catching a fish. One is getting one to bite the bait. Okay, got them on the line. Second is get them in the boat. It's a whole different, it's like the driving game on golf versus the putting game on golf. You got to get one on a line, you got to get him in a boat, and the third one is you want to decide whether he's a keeper or not. And I meet both buyers and sellers that I choose not to work with. It's just not a comfortable working situation. I get people day one telling me what they want to do. And although I value input, I've done this hundreds of times. I don't need to be told how to put up open house signs or how many open houses I should run or how I should be rewording your ad, although I always welcome input. My name is Joe Peters. I work with Coldwell Banker. I cover all of Hunterdon and Somerset. I'm going to play my commercial one more time, and I will be back next week. Thank you for tuning in.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Thank you for spending this hour with me. I will be back next week with a guest. Talk to you then.
USA Radio News with Rick Vincent.
Officials in Rockland County, New York are dealing with 186 confirmed cases of measles. County Executive Ed Day said despite a restraining order from a judge, he's continuing an emergency declaration order to prevent unvaccinated children from going out in public.
It is unacceptable to sit back and do nothing as more of our residents fall ill to this deadly disease, and court decisions aside, we will never do that.
Orthodox Jewish communities, where the virus is mainly spreading, are fighting back and filing lawsuits. President Donald Trump was in Minnesota Monday touting his tax cuts as the reason for the great economy. Economic advisor Kevin Hassett.
The thing that really jumped out at me about Minnesota is that new business formations, so applications to start a business, they're up in the last 2 years since the president was elected, 18% in Minnesota.
Hassett says the only thing that can explain the record low unemployment is the tax cut. You're listening to USA Radio News.
The tradition, the suspense, the race. Here's your chance to experience the Kentucky Derby firsthand. Rocket Mortgage is giving away 20 VIP trips to Churchill Downs to witness the Kentucky Derby. And one lucky winner will receive $250,000 toward a new home or pay off their mortgage. Enter today at homestretchsweepstakes.com.
No purchase necessary. 21 years or older. Ends on April 7, 2019. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.